Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Whole Foods Market brings you meals worth sharing this holiday season. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com/shop for our online menu and ordering system. Local turkeys, inspired sides, and even a little something for your hosts, all available online or in-store at one of our six Manhattan locations. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com for more details.
Welcome to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with a very interesting project, Tattoo presents Notes from a Kitchen. Artists Jeff Scott and Chef Blake Bashore have compiled this book, which I'm going to let them explain a little bit more, but it's about culinary passions, obsessions, a collection of things, notebooks, of moments. It's this wonderful kitchen verite, published and bound, and a big congrats that you guys actually were able to put this together.
Thanks, Michael, man. That's like killer. Kitchen verite, that's it. I mean, you nailed it right there, because this is about authentic life behind the line. You know what I mean? There's a lot of books out there that kind of glamorize cooking, and I think this is about demystifying it, you know, taking it. I kind of became a line cook with a camera for a couple of years, you know? It's a journey, man. It's like this. All chefs have this shared obsession, you know? If you hang out with chefs, there's... You lose the media vibe, lose what you see, you know, on television. It's just such a, it's not the right view. There's like, there's this process that goes on. There's a plate that needs to be, that gets set down in front of the diner. But if you pull back from the plate into the kitchen, from the kitchen out to the farm, farm into the soil. So it's like deconstructing a plate through the window of a chef's life. And if you could just spend like a ridiculous amount of time with these guys and girl, in the case of Emma Hurst. And if you could just kind of live their life or with them, you know, Johnny Izzouni hanging out in his loft, beating up on his punching bag, just releasing that endorphin. You know what I mean? Because these guys are high stress. So they've got to have this balanced life in order that they can do what they do for 14, 16 hours a day. So this is kind of an opportunity to show people who love food and people who love art, for that matter, or people who love the idea of creativity and what drives creative people to do what they do. It's a chance to get into their heads. And to go into the field and to learn why their food tastes so damn good.
Yeah, I mean, this is that great intersection of food and art. I mean, that's why it was so perfect as a topic on this show, because it is a non-traditional cookbook. I've never seen anything like this, but I know all the elements. Being a photographer, the layering effect, the, you know, photopolymer gravure, you know, doing stuff like that to present how a plate, as you said, is deconstructed and demystified. It's something that hasn't been done before. Why was this approach so important for you?
Well, I mean, again, I mean, whenever you go into a bookstore, you go and see what's been done before. I mean, the challenge is always, you know, you're looking through hundreds of, you know, there's beautiful books out there, of course. I mean, EMP is badass.
Yeah. And this is the Levin Madsen Park.
And, you know, so there's definitely some kudos going around. I mean, Grant Achatz's book that just came out, you know, is really, really insightful and really personal, and really it's a great narrative. But so many cookbooks are made so inexpensively by major publishers that if you pull off the dust jacket and you look at the quality of the book, it's really, really badly made.
Yeah.
And that's why you see them on Amazon at like less 35% right away. Boom. Because there's no love there. It's all about loving a product. I mean, if a chef is going to make something beautiful for you, they're going to go out and source the perfect ingredient. So the idea with this book is, why don't we just spend a stupid amount of money, right? Why don't we just get really obsessive and take all the risk up front on producing something that's really truly a museum piece. You know, this could be like an artifact in an art museum or an art gallery or in a glass case in somebody's home. At the same time, it's like it's tactile. There's etching marks. There's scratch marks. As you see, there's like notebook writing all over the front of the cover. There's deep indentations inside the cover. So when you touch this thing, you physically feel like you're holding onto a chef's notebook. So it's a modern book, but it has this approach of being around for maybe 20 years, 25 years.
Yeah.
But we feel that we're very uncompromising in our vision. I think if you can go into a publisher and say, we want to recreate this book, I really don't think that they would be up for it. I mean, we put our heart and soul into it. And I mean, the quality of the printing, the quality of the book, I mean, it truly shows.
Well, I mean, you went to other publishers and then decided to create your own publishing house just to be able to produce this. How did Tattru come to be? First of all, what does Tattru actually mean?
It's an amalgam of different, you actually called it, you know, initially you said tattoo. So it's sort of a coming together. It's got rue from an avenue in Paris and a rue for a sauce and a tattoo. So the idea also was going into, you know, a combination of words to create. We needed to come up with a name for the publishing company that we thought was sort of emblematic of what the book stood for, of what. So, you know, on the back even of the book, you can have, like, there's multiple definitions for tattoo, and this one is a culinary term that describes a fearless creative approach and enhanced sense of calm in the kitchen. So again, the idea of pushing the envelope but doing it with patience and doing it with calm and having some drinks, relaxing in the kitchen, and you know, it's not a stressful experience, man. It's like, it's stressful if you're trying to, like, if you're not prepared, you don't have your mise en place set up, and you, like, you don't have your, you know, you don't know what you're doing, you're just kind of going through a recipe list. But if you really take your time, you source carefully, you can just deconstruct yourself to just a few very beautiful basic ingredients, set it up. So we wanted kind of a book that would, on the one hand, take people on this voyage of discovery of creativity around with 10 top American chefs, and on the other hand, really give. I wanted to shoot a film, and I shot a film. I shot 100,000 photographs. I did 50 interviews, and I cut up the film pieces and put them inside the book. And then each chapter, I mean, there's like almost 1,000 pages in the book.
Yeah.
So it's really, there's no. And every section is unique to itself. There's no set structure to it. Every page is different. Every section is different. Every chef is, their section reflects who they are as a human being. So the idea is to use whatever mediums are possible, whether it's a photogravure, whether it's taking layers and layers, taking, you know, etching ink and then putting on a vellum sheet. So when you're turning the pages of the book, you're holding on to vellum. You feel like you're touching the chef's notebooks. So it's like, why shouldn't a cookbook have this emotionality to it? Why shouldn't it have an emotional quality? So when you feel, but you feel like you want to cry, you feel like, wow, this is what cooking is about. This is why the chef does what they do. Not like, you know, here's the Graham formula. Here's the mix. That's not what great cooking is about. It's about passion. It's about obsession. And it's about understanding the creative process. And that starts with chefs writing notes down, just like we all do, as things that we want to look at and do for the future. So that's a big part of going into this experience, is trying to open up and let the public see what the inside of a chef's mind, you know, looks like.
So this was a project that you were doing in Dallas, and then met Blake, and the combined forces created Tattru.
Yeah, I mean, this is like an invaluable partnership in the sense that it's a chef and an artist together, you know what I mean? So it's got that great balance to it.
Yeah.
And there was a quote-unquote celebrity chef that had hired me to do this because he had seen my Elvis book. I'd done a bunch of stuff documenting Elvis's private art of, you know, his personal possessions. And so this dude's like, hey, man, can you, you know, make this for me? You know, do this emotional thing for me. And I guess, but that didn't mean he'd be in the kitchen. So as he walked the floor, I was inside, you know, hanging with the line cooks and really just getting the adrenaline of being inside of a kitchen. I was like, man, I get this. I get this. I get the push. And it was just, I literally spent a couple hundred hours in the kitchen, and I didn't get any shots of the chef pretty much. And it was like, there's got to be another way to do this. And then Blake, who had been showing me how to do some really sweet cooking techniques at home, just kind of like what we were talking about, like without a lot of stress, just sort of like saying, hey, dude, here's how to control fire. You know what I mean? Here's how to season. And it's like, right? I mean, it's sort of, it's these basics that a lot of people just, you know, are just pushing aside, that just learn how to just deal with fire
building
for a week.
A foundation, yeah.
You know?
Sure.
And but then through this, you know, he's like, he saw this thing fall apart with this other chef, and he's just like, man, let's just put our resources together. And through that, we formed this publishing company, and then boom, off to the races.
Yeah.
Tattru is all about risk taking. So I think that going into this, both an artist and a chef, you know, risk taking to the max.
Yeah. So
and like, this dude is a serious risk taker.
Yeah. You went to school for cooking, the Cordon Bleu.
I did.
cooked around the country a little bit.
I did. I spent a couple years. I did a private chefing gig in Dallas, owned a catering company, and then started to teach people, you know, how to create fine dining in their own home.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, when I met Jeff. So it's, you know, I took a different path, I would say, in the culinary world, not the traditional path. I thought I was just going to, you know, work my way up, you know, sous chef through the ranks, you know, up to executive chef. But I mean, I decided to take a new direction in the culinary world.
And, yeah. You know, I mean, what has this project taught you that you probably wouldn't have got from a traditional education?
Oh, man. I mean, if I had this book in culinary school, I mean, I suggest it for culinary students, especially. I mean, you get a, you know, I'd say 8 or 10 year jump on everyone else.
Yeah.
Just because you're actually seeing what, you know, your life's going to be like if you take this direction. And it's a great, it's an inspirational thing. I mean, the beautiful part about this book is it takes its time, so you can really truly understand these, you know, emotional characters and truly get to understand what they do and, you know, why is their craft so creative and how, you know, how do they physically do what they do, you know, every part of the day. So
yeah. And like you said, it is a 1,000-page tome split into 2 volumes at the moment. Assuming there will probably be more because this feels just like the tip of the iceberg. But who was your entry point? Who was your first chef that you met and followed?
I was buddies with a chef named Joel Harrington, who's just a total badass. And he was at the Ritz-Carlton. He had a Dove Mountain in Tucson. And so when this other deal fell apart, it was like I called my bro and I'm like, dude, I got to hang with you for a while and just step into your world. And he's like, yo, come out. And so we basically just like spent 2 weeks just cruising, you know, flying through the Arizona desert in his little Mini Cooper.
Yeah.
And spending a ton of time with his farmer, Richard Starkey, out in just right outside of Tucson. And this dude is like coveralls and, you know, rubbing dirt in his hands. And he's like, this is good dirt.
Yeah.
This is quality dirt. You know, it's something falls in the dirt. You just get on after it and eat it up and dirt and all and might even make you regular, you know? I mean, the guy's a total character. And so it was like, but then he would talk about, you know, how to keep gophers and squirrels off of, you know, off the produce and how to create the soil and then put peppermint and put, you know, dish soap and all these little tricks that he would use so that he would have, you know, a successful season. In the meantime, he's experimental as heck. And he's like, he's doing crossbreeds. He's doing these giant Argo squash that are just like sick. And he just had, we did an opening a week or so ago and he had some seeds that were sent to him from Laos. So he had some squash from Laotian squash.
Yeah.
And like that's the kind of passion that these guys have out in the field, you know what I mean? So spending time with Joel out there in the desert, spending time with the farmer and really getting to understand food on that sort of, you know, real core molecular level of, you know, why things even come out of the ground and how they are and how old are they and why does a carrot, you know, taste like this, you know, from 200 years ago, that's what a carrot tastes like, not, you know, not what we think. We can't go to the store and get it. You have to go to the farm and get a carrot if you want to taste what a carrot tastes like.
Yeah. The word visceral keeps on coming up in this book, and it is a very elicited emotional response that you get from flipping through these pages. And we had mentioned foundation before, you know, actually having the skills to be able to put things together. Yet there are no recipes in the book. There are food photos, but no recipes. Why this choice?
It's actually probably a better cooking book. It's a better cookbook without recipes. And I love the question. I mean, everyone comes at you with that, right?
Yeah.
Man, how come there's no recipes? And that's awesome, you know? Because it's a book about cooking. It's a story about cooking. It's a conversation with 10 chefs about food, about cooking. Just like going out to the desert and learning about how hanging out with Sean Brock and going up and I'm sleeping in his house, waking up, drinking Pappy with him. You know what I mean? Like very little sleep, actually. But we're going up and hanging out with Glenn Roberts at Anson Mills, who's, you know, complete fanatic about, that's where Sean learned to, you know, save seeds. And then he'll get varietals that he'll put out into the farm at Thornhill Farm or Thackeray Farm. And he'll like, he'll focus on the essence of what can be grown. What was the question? Man, I got a little lost.
Question was, why no recipes?
Yeah. And the idea is it's a conversation about food, to learn food at a more core level. Because if you learn how to control fire, if you learn how to learn what these chefs do, and actually it's a film of chefs cooking. So you're watching, it's a book, but it's a film within a book. So you actually get to see how chefs combine flavors. You get to see how they control heat. You see, you have dialogues. I just carry tape recorders with me everywhere I go. So I'm like always rapping with these guys, and you're learning what they're like teaching you like a dissertation on the art and the craft of cooking. So that's going to, like, if you go through these things, you're going to actually see visually. You'll be in the kitchen with them. So you'll hear them talk about food. You'll see them actually plating. You'll see them bring foods together from the farm all the way to the plate. And that's going to give you, I think, a much deeper understanding of the very essence of food itself. And then you go and take your own risk in the kitchen. It's like, you've got, there's tons of books out there that have great recipes. So rock and roll. I mean, you know, that's awesome. But why make another one? I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, I would rather do a book that has a storyline and has a visceral communication device in terms letting people have an enjoyment, you know, lose the stress and just have a dialogue. And if you just dialogue up with, you know, these great chefs, you're going to learn more about cooking. And you're probably going to stay looking at this book for months and months, if not years. Whereas most cookbooks, what? I mean, if you look at a recipe or two or three or four, and then you move on to the next one. So hopefully this is sort of like this encyclopedia of knowledge that you're getting from these great chefs. And that will teach you how to become a much better cook.
So aside from collecting this kind of culinary ephemera, Blake, you must have been in these kitchens and picked up some really amazing core techniques that you wouldn't have, you know, learn in a traditional cookbook.
Sure. I mean, I think that this book definitely teaches through innovation and inspiration. It's supposed to inspire you. So for me, you know, I was kind of more behind the scenes. Jeff was on the front lines, I would say. But yeah, it's definitely been amazing to see, you know, to experience Sean Brock in his own kitchen and see him, you know, his passion being laid down on a plate. It's truly, you know, artistic. You know, he's painting a picture on a plate, and it's amazing. So I've learned so much through this journey, and you know, it's what a great business partner Jeff has been, and this entire creative adventure. But it's a long road to go.
Last night, Aldea George Mendez, who's a wonderful chef here in New York, put on a beautiful 5-course dinner for you guys. Even more than that, can't even count the amount of food that I think that was served. You also have Johnny Uzzini, who was at Jean Georges here in New York, ending his tenure at the end of the year. Other great chefs like Emma Hirst at Sorella in Manhattan. Zach Palacio, whose mother actually is on this network.
That's awesome.
I'm trying to think who else. I mean, it's just...
Jason Aroni. Joel Harrington, Matt Gaudette.
Michael Osconis, who's been a guest on this show. Why these chefs? Why this selection of 10? What was so akin to all of them?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's probably the most fun I've had with this thing, is that I just started with my friends. So I started with my bro, Joel, and then he introduced me to Jason Aroni, who's got the pork provocateur, and he's got a rep. And Jason's a badass cook. I mean, like, man, I mean, that boy is like kicking down some flavors that are out of this world. He's like, you know, he's a little hard to handle. You know, Jason's definitely got a lot of edge to him, but badass chef, really, really tight. And then I met Emma and became friendly with Emma Hirst. And then a lot of this has just been hanging out with everyone's friends. And Emma introduced me to George, and so I became friendly with George, and George introduced me to John. And then Johnny introduced me to Sean. You know, I just met him. I was just hanging with George and hanging with Sean, and I didn't even know who Sean Brock was. And he had just won the James Beard. And Johnny's just like, yo, you just got to hang with my dude, Sean. You'll dig on him. You guys have a good time. And then after the dinner was over, you know, George was like, do you know who that is? And I'm like, no, dude, it's awesome, dude. We had some great drinks. He's like, no, that's Sean Brock, man. and then I called him up, and I'm like, yo, dude, let's do this thing in the book. And he's like, yeah, come out to Charleston, and boom. So everything was like one friend introduced me to another friend, and they're all a nice, tight circle of people who really love each other a lot. So to have this thing last night with, you know, Sean flying in, George kicking it, you know, George doing goat, Sean was doing a duck, Michael Osconis did like a 3-course dessert tasting. I mean, it was like, it was really, and they're all such beautiful friends. And after it's over, Danielle stops by and Paul LeBron stopped, you know, so it's like boom, boom, boom. It's like this community is all about love. It's all about sharing. And I come from a more narcissistic environment of art world sucks. I mean, the art world is about give me, give me, give me. And it's about everyone trying to take from everyone else. And whereas chefs are all about, I want to give my love to you. I'm sharing everything in my heart I want to give to you on a plate. And so that was really cool, and I think that's why this book is successful, is because these chefs all were just really generous with me and giving me the kind of access. I mean, this is only about access, right? I mean, it's obviously there's some wild creativity going down, but it's when you get this kind of access and you have this kind of unbelievable giving that's going on around you. So I think working with chefs is really the most ideal way because they're just so loving, and they so much want you. They want everyone around them to benefit. They don't want to hide their ideas. They want to share their ideas. And that's a great group of people to hang with.
Well said. On that, we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Here today with Tetru's Note from a Kitchen. These amazing, I can't even say enough about them right now, these amazing pages inside a chef's mind, fusing photos, fusing illustrations, just fusing thoughts to hopefully progress creativity in the kitchen. You said the art world's a little more narcissistic than the cooking world. What is your past? I mean, you've done a whole bunch of multimedia installations, art. Has anything been similar to this project?
Yeah, I mean, I just came off a 10... I mean, I started off documenting American history. So I did a series called Vanishing America, where I went across the country into Wyoming, Montana, New Mexico, Arizona, and I would find these old historic mining towns, these places that were falling apart, and I would photograph them. And then I'd come back in and make paintings of my photographs. And then I got in connection with the National Trust for Historic Preservation in Washington, D.C. And we did like a 3-year tour of this work, was, you know, on exhibition at Sundance Film Festival. And it really had a great, it just went everywhere. It was all about how an artist can use their vision to get people's awareness up on preserving, you know, the history of our country. And then after that was over, I wanted to do sort of something similar, you know, culturally, but I wanted to do it on a more human scale. And I loved Elvis when I was growing up. Elvis was the man.
Yeah.
Still is the man. Somewhere. And I contacted the estate in Memphis, and I had a meeting with them. And I said, listen, if you'll get me access to all of Elvis's stuff, I'd like to document his life and do a fine art treatise for museums on who Elvis was as a human being. And so basically what I was going after was... And they said yes, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that's been going on for 10 years. So I just finished that project after right before this one. And basically it was the idea of if you looked at the guy, you know, as just on a mortal level, you know, because Elvis is just a dude and just, you know, wakes up in the morning. And what is, you know, how does he get through the day? Cause obviously the stresses of, you know, his job are just like anyone else's. Well, maybe more than anybody else's. But I just looked at his driver's license, and it was just this, like, in his handwriting was real kind of humble. And you kind of saw his, you know, he was born in a little shotgun shack. And he lived there, and then he came up, and then he has Graceland. So he went from like rags to riches. And I got a chance to go through his. He became a federal narcotics officer by President Nixon in 1970. So there's all this great stuff. And Elvis carried pistols with him everywhere he went. And the narcotics badge was like a huge. Everywhere he went, he wanted to become like an officer. So he had like this rebel reputation, but he carried pistols. He carried, you know, badges of all sorts. So there was kind of this conflict of this one of the pieces I have with his federal narcotics badge and his 45 semi-auto, which he had like turquoise inlaid and mother of pearl with ENP on the other side. And it was like, why is this guy who's the ultimate, you know, anti-authority figure so connecting with cops and authority? And he had those like Starsky and Hutch lights that, you know, put on top of your car, and he'd pull people over and whip out his badge and like, yes, ma'am, you are going a little too fast. And, you know, it, so that was kind of a prism into the guy's life that I don't think had happened before. So when this project came on, the first thing I wanted to do was get a hold of everybody's notebooks. So mm-hmm. I did thousands of photographs of diaries, journals, notepads, and chefs, you know, take a lot of notes and have a lot of information in there. And you know, a lot of it's real salty, which is real cool too. You know, do something with eggs or keep these notebooks listed. You know, just, I don't want to repeat it. there's wild stuff in this book. I mean, there's pieces of information that a lot of chefs, but they trusted me. So they let me photograph stuff that I think, you know, Sean talks about that chefs are very private people and, you know, they really have stuff they want to hide. And so this book is about revealing things. So if just going through, Michael Lasconis does this creative essay in the front of volume two, and then Sean is a forward in the front of volume one, and both of those are filled with, you know, tons of notebook pages there where you can see their minds at work. You can see this stuff that they're using to inspire themselves. So I went from sort of documenting Elvis's personal possessions to documenting chef's personal possessions as sort of a side aspect to this project. And so there was being in the kitchen, the line action, getting people. I became a line cook with a camera so that the public could be inside the kitchens, and it would kind of demystify the idea of what actually happens in service. So how are tickets, you know, and, you know, fire, you know, it's like, what's going on in there? So this, and the idea too would be to spend a lot of, we both decided that this was going to need a lot of pages, because if you try to do something too quick, you're going to take away the emotional experience. So how many pages was the book? And it started out at like, what, 300 pages?
300 pages,
And then it went to 5, and then it went to 7, and then it went to 1,500, and we had to bring it down to like 1,000.
Yeah.
So the idea here is that you're taking as much time as necessary to pull people into the emotional experience of cooking. And that also, I think, is another way in which to teach people how great food is made, is just to take the amount of time necessary, slowly take people through the whole process, out from the, you know, to hanging with a seedsman, the best in the world, hanging at the best farms in the world, talking to farmers, watch, you know, literally being at the Union Square Market with Johnny and George, and George has got his, you know, face buried in a bushel of sage. I mean, literally, he walks up to it and just drops his face right into it and just keeps it there. And I'm like snapping away. And then these guys are, you know, interplaying with each other. And then George, you know, the public is watching these guys. They're having a blast. They couldn't have more fun. They have this relationship with the purveyors. Then I walk back to Aldea with George, and he, like, the bounty is like all over the counter. And then, you know, the line cooks come out and they have a discussion about, look what we just brought in. Let's figure out what to do with what was fresh. And that's also something that the public really needs to understand, is just get a relationship with your farmer. Go find out whatever's fresh now out of the ground today, and just go home and cook with that. You know, forget your recipes, man. Just learn how to control heat, learn how to season properly, and buy perfect, beautiful, you know, historic ingredients. And then you'll have food that tastes like, and then use texture. That's the other thing I think I really learned by hanging out with these chefs, is texture is so big. And so the idea of adding, you know, Johnny does a lot of dialogue about the, you know, texture, and the idea of every bite you take is going to have a different percentage of the ingredient and then the texture to it, so that no bite you take is ever going to be the same. So that textural change provides you with an emotional experience as well. So then there's this idea of implanting sense memory, using sense memory, evoking emotions in food. And it's interesting because, I mean, if you watch somebody eat something, if you really just sit down and just kind of sit back in the corner and you watch someone in a dining room eating, you can almost watch them process the experience that they're having and kind of commit it to memory. And so they're committing to memory this new, you know, moment in their lives that they'll never forget. So when you see somebody having this sort of intense savory or dessert, you know, experience, they're really, it's just, you know, it's what Grant Achatz is doing, it's what Sean's doing, it's what all great, just Johnny's doing, all great chefs are reflecting back on childhood memories and just trying to give you an experience that, you know, that literally changes your life.
Yeah. So Blake, when you first met Jeff, could he cook? Did he know about food?
Yeah, no, he had the basics down. I think I just took his cooking to the next level, with giving him more advanced techniques, and he just had so many questions. He was, you know, avid learner, but you know, he was definitely on the level of you know, any great cook. So
yeah, so I mean, hearing him say stuff about how important texture is, and so does that make you feel like humbled that you guys did this project together?
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't have done it with anyone else. I mean, it's definitely fun to see it through a you know, a non-culinarian, if you will, or, you know, he's an artist. So, but it's fun to see it, both perspectives. And that's, I think, that what gives this book, you know, it's realism.
Yeah.
I would say, I mean, what book, Going back to George's section, I mean, what book focuses on 30 pages to develop a salad?
Yeah.
You know, what's the process that takes you through, you know, months and months of experimentation? You know, a seasonal salad that George creates, you know, maybe the onions are too salty or the cheese is too soft, or we need a little bit more, you know, lettuce and texture. So George definitely just takes you on a ride from the start to the end of when a salad gets on the menu. So it's just beautiful.
Because it's cool, because as frenetic as the pages can be and as temporal as they seem, you realize, like how you said, how long a process it is to get to something as simple as a salad. So often you see cookbooks and it's whimsy. It's like, oh.
Sure. And real estate in cookbooks, I mean, is really tight, I would say. It's expensive. I mean, it's these days they're trying to, you know, push it into the smallest form I would say available.
Yeah.
We did the exact opposite. What I think is just amazing. I mean, we focused on, you know, the stuff that matters. I mean, going out into the farm with Sean, I mean, you see him literally picking stuff from the vine. You know, you see him talking about how these seeds emotionally affect him, how his grandmother's heirloom seeds, you know, pull him back to a time where he was a child. I don't see another cookbook out there like this.
Yeah. So I mean, you're talking about the idea of procurement, the idea of being able to go out there and get these ingredients rather than just being able to afford the best ingredients and have them shipped to you. So it's that connection to, like you keep on saying, the farmer, to nature, to the origins of the dish.
And I mean, that goes to what, you know, the question earlier about, you know, it's a cookbook without recipes, is that if you could understand food at its origin, if you understand, you know, how a seed grows, where it's from, if you have a personal relationship with a farmer, you and I are sitting here, you know, looking at each other, we just met, but we're forming a friendship, you know, we're forming a connection based on our love of food, our love of, you know, talking probably, our love of photography, you know, our love of capturing moments. And once you have that relationship with a farmer, are you really going to think about food the same way again? Are you really going to walk into your Price Chopper and you go grab something, you know, you're not going to do that. So I think just again, I mean, I think the more you do something well, the more you change your life. So you keep doing the right things over and over again, you're going to start making amazing food at home, and people are going to go, "How'd you do that?" And you go, "Well, I got these from the farmer this morning, and that's why this tastes so damn good."
So aside from myself, which I almost feel like this book is specifically made for and catered to, who is your audience? Are you trying to, you know, garner the interests of chefs, aspiring cooks, artists, or just the general public?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really a journey for everybody. I think I really loathe the word foodie. I mean, I just can't wait till that gets out of the lexicon. Just everyone needs to just stop, you know, really seriously, because we all eat. We wake up, we eat food all day, so we're all foodies. I get it, you know?
I feel like I'm a fooder.
Right? Much better.
I do things with food. Yeah.
You like, you eat, you love, you know, your taste, you know, you have these experiences with food. And I think that's what it's about. It's about, you know, everyone's going to have a different kind of an experience with this book. This book is meant, like Blake was saying, if you're a culinary student and you want to know like what this world looks like, this book will tell you exactly what life is like for the badass chefs in this country and really representative of the world. It'll tell you, you know, in two volumes in 1,000 pages, you're going to learn more than you probably learned your entire, you know, all the money you just spent at culinary school, you're not going to get back, you know.
$85 for $2
for a hundy, you're golden, you know, because that. And it also, it's a relational book because it's very physical, it's very tactile. It was made, again, it was made to have a physical connection, an emotional connection. So if you're an artist and you want to understand the nature of creativity, I think going through this book, you can relate the chef's creative journey to a writer, to a painter, to a musician, to an actor, to a poet. I mean, there's listening to these chefs, listen to Sean Brock talk. He's a poet, you know, he's evangelical. There's a lot of really creative things going down with layering of text and images and layering of inks, and there's buildups of inks that you've never seen. And I've included, we have so many pages of vellum, these see-through sheets that have this feel, this beautiful textural quality to them. And that way it's like there's information on top of information that you can see through the pages into the other pages behind them. So the book actually changes. It doesn't even stay the same. And then as you photograph the book, it changes again. So it's really this emotional experience. So if you want to learn about the act of creativity, if you want to learn about how to cook great food, if you want to hear incredible storylines about, you know, you want to know who Johnny Azuni is, like not on television, you'll find out in this book, you know.
Excellent. Yeah, volume 3.
No, Johnny's in volume 1.
Yeah, but is volume 3 happening?
Yeah, we're just kidding. We're in sleep.
Yeah, exactly. It's been quite a trip. Well, thank you again. It's such inspiration on the page. Tatrux, TATRUX.com, Notes from a Kitchen.
Yeah, and if the book's available at notesfromakitchen.com, it's don't go to Amazon because they're not set up the way you think they are. So notesfromakitchen.com is where the only place to get it. It's exclusively, it's our website, and it's available for pre-order now, and it ships in 1 week.
Excellent. Fantastic. And work up those arm muscles because these are some heavy pages.
Awesome.
Excellent. Thank you guys so much again. You've been listening to The Food Scene on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkell, hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.